The man shows up. He looks like an angry troll doll in real life. It's like July. The man is wearing hiking boots and carrying a backpack.
Hello and welcome back to Soft Spoken, a podcast by yours truly, Marfin Chan. This is the 9th episode, and I have a special guest with me today, my friend Shay Stewart Boulay. We'll have a longer introduction of her later, but thanks again for tuning in. And this conversation was so long because we had so much fun. We were both talking about dating apps and dating as people of color with a little bit of wine on the side. And our conversation was just so great. We were also using it as an excuse to catch up. And so what has happened is that this episode is part one of my conversation on dating apps and dating as people of color with my friend Shay Stewart Boulay. So you will have to wait a few weeks for the second part of the episode. And so I just wanted to make that clear. And you might have noticed also that there's new music, and that's just a song that I had put together, a track that I put together during the pandemic. And I just was looking for something a little bit lighter for this episode because it's a little more fun. It's about dating, something that we've all experienced. And so that's why there's a new track. And, you know, I like it on this podcast episode so much, I might keep it around. So without further ado, welcome back. Thank you for tuning in. And here's my interview with my friend Shay Stewart Boulay. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Soft Spoken Podcast. I am here with my good friend Shay Stewart Boulay, who is a fellow Portlander and fellow Mainer. We first met in real life, in person. I knew of her blog and her writing in the local newspaper for quite some time before this, but sometime in 2018 or 2019, there was an NAACP MLK Day breakfast that was put on by our mutual friend, Rachel Talbot Ross, who is the Speaker of the House now. And I gave her a hug. I went in for a hug and I was like, hey, can I take a selfie? And since then, we've gotten to know each other quite well. And we've served in elected office recently together on the Portland Charter Commission. And, you know, we both had an experience, let's just say that. And I could always lean on Shay for, you know, a grounded sort of view and sort of ask her for her wisdom and advice on, like, what is going on with these people or you know, things like that. So we got to know each other pretty well, and I'm so glad to have her, to have you, Shay, on the podcast. And a lot of people, you know, they see you, your blog, your Twitter, your Instagram, your Facebook, your online presence, and they see your work. And I think it's so easy for people to fall into that trap of just seeing people as their public personas. And so could you give us a little bit of for those of the people in the audience who might not know who you are, the human being behind the public persona, could you give us a little bit of an introduction, a little bit of a bio?
Well, I guess I would pull a little bit from my bios, which are, you know, written whenever I like have a speaking engagement, or both for my day job and for my blog. But, you know, I was born 50 years ago in Chicago. I grew up at the intersection of working class and poor, depending on the year. Some years we were government cheese poor. Some years we were happily upper working class, like when my dad was a cop. So the way I grew up deeply has influenced so much about my life. I actually grew up in predominantly Black spaces, which makes my being in Maine really unique. My grandparents were one of the first Black families to integrate the neighborhood that my grandmother would eventually live in for about 45 years until she died. So like race has always been an interesting part of my life because I grew up in a family where there were never any white people in our lives, except I would see them at school because my dad had this funny thought that, which was really common at that time in the 70s and early 80s, that if you wanted to have your, you know, your kid of color get a better education, you send them to a white school, which further complicated my relationship to race. Because my dad was from, you know, Arkansas. My grandparents on his side were sharecroppers. And, you know, my dad grew up picking cotton in Arkansas. He was one of 16 kids. I married early in life. I actually ran off at 18 because I was a bit of a troublemaking kid. I ran off and got married and didn't tell my parents for like 2 months. And by the time I told them, I was pregnant. And it was sort of like, oops, we can't undo this marriage. So you're really married and having a kid. So I had my first kid at 19. Promptly got, we split up when our son was like 13 months old. Worked a lot of different jobs, ended up becoming a community organizer through a stint as a AmeriCorps Vista in my early 20s. Remarried, and long story short, a custody battle with my ex-husband, my first husband, is partly why I landed in Maine. But before I landed in Maine, I got an undergraduate degree in African American studies, which really kind of set me off on a path of this like exploration of my Black self. I landed in Maine 21 years ago with the intent to only be here for 8 years. Like the plan was, my son was 10. As soon as he turned 18, I was going to break out of here. Life had another plan. Along the way, I started a blog back in 2008 when there were lots of like women in their 30s starting blogs. Never had any expectation of it being anything more than a public venting space about race. At the time, I was working in the nonprofit sector. By that point, I had picked up a master's degree in nonprofit management and just needed a place to vent about how white it was and how Maine is and how it was really a challenge for me coming from being in pretty Black spaces. And yet, like landing in this really white like state, and somewhere along the way, the blog got picked up. It became really well known in Maine. It's actually well known in anti-racism spaces across the country. I'm really known for being this sort of activist, and yet that's such a small portion to me of who I am. I mean, increasingly, I'm much more interested in more internal, like workings of our spiritual selves. You know, I'm 50, I'm a mom now, I'm a grandmother, I've been divorced times. So I think a lot about like life from the perspective of what it's like to be middle age in a like a culture that is really focused on youth. You know, what does it mean to like wake up with each passing day and realize that you're no longer young? Though people will say, oh, you're still young. It's like, no, dude, you're not young at 50. I'm dealing with a recent bout of sciatica still ongoing that's been going on for like 10 days. And I'm like, this is my official wake up to I am no longer a young person. I did not have this sort of stuff happening in my 20s, 30s, or early 40s. So that's a little bit of who I am. You know, I would probably say the biggest thing people don't realize about me is like family is like the most important thing to me. I'm the matriarch of our family. Both my parents have passed on. My grandparents have passed on. So our little branch of the family, I'm like, you know, I'm mama, you know, I am the mama. There are no mamas higher than me. So that's me.
Wow. That is so amazing. That is exactly what I try to hit on through this podcast is that, you know, you might see people on a pedestal or as a public persona or only as their Instagram page, Twitter page, website, all that type of stuff. But we all forget that there are human beings behind the screens and the keyboards. And so I love that you gave sort of a totality of who you are, a Shay, the Shay that not everyone necessarily knows. Maybe they don't even want to know because all they want to know you as is this hero or this, in some cases, I guess, villain, as we saw during your service on the Charter Commission. And I think that's just so great that you just, you know, provided that background of who you are, your upbringing, your life experiences, your paths, divorce, marriage, children, parenting, and all those types of things. And so what I really want to focus on today is dating. And you and I talk off and on about what is it like dating in a place like Maine, as white as it is, and what is it like with dating apps and all those types of things? So how, in your opinion, has dating changed? You know, you're single now, but you've been married, as you said a few times, you have kids and you're in your 50s. How has dating changed from, you know, when you first got married to now?
You know, I think about this a lot. I feel like I got married at 18 and then again at 24, and I was with my second husband for 20 years. And it's just such a really different world. Like, you know, I met my first husband. We actually went to high school together and we shared like a really good friend in common. So one of those like, you know, childhood love sort of things. And I met my second husband. We worked at the same organization. And it's just like such a different world. So back when when I was getting married into, you know, married, we didn't have cell phones. So the ability to like go and check somebody out did not exist in the way that it does now. Like now, if you even meet somebody, you're like, I want to know their name so I can look up all their socials. Back then, you actually had to spend time with a person. You actually talked on the phone. I mean, I know with my second husband, like as our relationship, as we started dating and getting to know each other, like we'd spend hours on the telephone, not texting, but on the actual phone. You know, I definitely remember times where we would both like fall asleep on the phone, you know, because we would like didn't want to hang up. And now, you know, I've been single now 8 years and it's like a different world. It's like, one, nobody knows anybody anymore to introduce you to. And especially in Maine where the circles, it's not 6 degrees of separation. You know, as public figures, it's like 1.5 degrees of separation. So people aren't a mystery. And yet there's so much that you don't get to know about a person. I feel like dating using apps, it's weird. It's reduced our human connection to a very transactional level. I mean, think about it. We swipe. Most of these platforms, you get a few paragraphs, you get some pictures, you're not really getting the essence of anybody. There should just be enough to like pique your interest. And if your interest is piqued, it's like this expectation you're going to meet and there's going to be this huge immediate connection. And if there's not, you're like on to the next person. What's interesting is that my second husband is somebody who, those who know him, we're not two people you ever would have put together, much less put together married for 20 years. And part of it is like, he is vastly different than me. He's like the short white guy who used to have red hair before he lost his hair. He's kind of a geek. I mean, by his own admission, he's like the geekiest geek that ever geeked. And he's a geek in his mid 50s now. I remember when he asked me out and I almost said no, because he was not what I considered attractive. And yet the way he asked me out, this would have been 1995. We worked in this office, and this was before Starbucks was everywhere in the country. At this point, Starbucks only existed in Seattle and in Chicago. So Starbucks was like a huge deal. It was like a treat, like, oh my God. And I've always been a lifelong coffee lover. And everybody who's ever worked with me knows like coffee was my jam. And back then Starbucks was my jam. And so he was a writer and he was really shy. So he left me a letter on my desk and a half pound of Starbucks coffee beans. And the letter was, you know, I enjoy talking to you around the water cooler, literally, because that's what we used to do back then in the office, like get together around the water cooler. People had lunch, totally different social like ways in which we connected. And he said, I'd love to take you out, because he knew that I'd recently broken up with someone. And my first thought was, this man is not really attractive. I can't see us having anything in common. I went home, I called my mother, and I was like, oh my God, he's a tacky dresser. I don't know. And my mother said, he sounds really sweet. Like I read her the letter and the coffee. And she said, go have a date with the man. So I was a single mom at this point. I divorced my first husband. So I'm like, okay, screw it. I'm just going to get a free meal out of it at best. Marfine, we went to this restaurant. We closed down the restaurant. We talked for like 5 hours. Because there was no pressure, because I had no assumptions, we just talked. Like, it was like one of those sweet, and you know, I was a pretty hot young woman. I was super thin, curvy, like, oh my God, like he didn't see me as this body. I was like, okay. And you know, our next date was on New Year's Eve, and he made me dinner at his house. And then by the third date, it was like, I think I might like this guy. Like, no, he's not my type. He's not what I look at as like, oh my God. And you know what? A year and a half later, 2 years later, we ended up getting married. And, you know, it's funny looking back, we've talked about it during our divorce. No, we probably should have never gotten married because there were some real differences. I'm not a geeky person, but it was just, it was a connection. Well, I say all this to say, we don't allow that to happen anymore. Like if we meet somebody, it's like, you got to check all my boxes. And if you don't check all the boxes, people don't even give you a chance. I remember several years ago, I went out on a what I call a meet and greet, because the first date's nothing more than a meet and greet, you know? Yeah. You're both sizing each other up. And it seemed like we had a really good connection. The guy was an engineer. We had kids the same age. And the next day he's like, I'm sorry. Like, I thought you were really cool, but I just, you know, I couldn't see there being a thing. And I thought about it like, man, we are that shallow now. And I feel like because of apps, it diminishes the quality of connection. And, you know, I've been in this relationship now for the past like year plus with someone that I'm on, you know, we've broken up, but we're still connected. And part of it is because like we gave each other a chance, if that made any sense. I just feel like we don't know how to connect, and apps have only, between social media as a whole and the culture of apps, it takes away the ability to like really think about, is this someone I could connect with at a heart level?
Yeah, yeah, that's so true. You know, I agree with you totally on the quantity over quality or quality over quantity type of dichotomy. And, you know, I talk a lot of my friends in the gay community, you know, we didn't, at least the ones that I know who told me that they had a chance to date in high school, there weren't that many other gay kids in their school. There was one or two more, and that was their dating pool. But then, lo and behold, move to a big city, go to college, and there's way more. And dating apps just open that up so much more, because you can, you know, set your geographic location, you can set the radius of people that you want to see, and you can meet people that you wouldn't otherwise meet. But the problem with that, as you mentioned, is it becomes quantity over quality. In this fishes sea of fishes, there's plenty of fish in the sea, but how do you figure out which fish is the big catch, you know?
I absolutely would agree with you. I think that there's just this quantity thing. Like, again, you can just go through an app and decide like, okay, there's 15 people. And if you match with them and you just go out with them, there could be somebody that you really overlook. And I say this because the person that I've been with for the past year and a half, you know, off and on, isn't someone that I naturally would have connected with. Partly he's 10 years younger than me, so like he's getting ready to turn 40. But I remember like when we met, we actually had a conversation in our second date. Like I thought it'd be one drink. It was a lot of drinks and we just chatted for hours. And I think that, again, because I had the experience of how I had relationships previously, I wasn't checking off like, oh, he didn't check every box. And it's funny because a year prior to meeting him, I wrote, I don't know if you've ever done this, the list of what you want in a person.
I don't think I've ever done that, but I definitely have had a list in my head.
Well, at the end of 2020, I had a girlfriend who was also divorced, and she ended up getting married it was New Year's Eve 2020 going into 21. And as she was preparing to get married that night, she did a live on Facebook and told us how she wrote this list like 2 years before because she wanted to be really clear and intentional about the man that she wanted. And when she went on the apps, the list was so precise, it only, you know, she had two dudes who popped up, and one of them, well, now he's her husband. So I tried to do that, but in Maine, that didn't quite work. I didn't quite get what I wanted. The first year after I wrote the list, I met tall man of color, financially stable, seemed like all the things I wanted, and that turned into a nightmare. So, you know, at the beginning of 2022, I was like, maybe we don't need to have everything on the list. And it's funny, at the end of last year, I revisited the list and I actually shared it on my Instagram page. And the man, as we call him, saw it and he didn't say anything about it. But I said, like, you know, there are a lot of things on this list that he didn't match. The only thing I think that was huge was like the spiritual emotional connection. You know, he met my minimum height requirement. I don't know. Are you that shallow? Do you have a minimum height requirement?
I think I do have a preference for guys that are at least my height, but I've, you know, have dated and, you know, had some fun with taller and shorter.
Okay. See, I married a short. My first husband was 6'4". My second husband was 5'8". So I'm like, nah, you have to be minimum height. You have to be my dad's height, 5'10", because I'm 5'4.5". That gives us a good, you know. So he met that. He had dark hair, but I was like, but he's Italian. He's not a man of color. So I was like, okay. But in the end, it's like, you got to make time and space for that actual connection. And I fear that the culture of apps, I mean, I've had friends who have been single for a while and they never meet anybody. And I'm like, part of me wants to go, but do you ever give anybody a chance? Mm-hmm. Especially, I would say, in this hypercritical world around social justice, which we're both a part. So it's like, we expect this person to have the right language, the right, they must share our values. And it's like, not everything in life works that way. You know, There are people who I consider to have lived values as an anti-racist because I observe how they live, but they might not ever say I'm an anti-racist, but they have it. It's an embodied experience. And again, the apps, there's so much quantity that we forget that, you know what, you want quality, not quantity.
Yeah, and not on a social justice note, you know, I've seen on, you know, this is related to like Instagram, people on Instagram and social media turning all of their profile pictures to black and putting hashtag Black Lives Matter, all that type of stuff on their profiles. I actually saw people doing that on dating apps, which I thought was kind of hilarious because for me, some of the guys that I saw, I happen to know in real life, and you know, they would say on their profile, Black Lives Matter, Asian Lives Matter, all that type of stuff. But I always caught myself sort of also questioning, like, have I ever seen this person go on a date with a person of color before, or like their friend group? Is there even a person of color in their friend group? And so, you know, that's some of the stuff I've seen and have observed. But there's also like the other side of it too, where, you know, some people are just so blatant about it. They're just like, no, I only date white people, or like, you know, no blacks or Hispanics or Asians. And they're just blatant about it. Well, you know, what's been your experience on your side of things from the straight person's perspective?
So one little thing that people might be really surprised to learn about me, because I work in, you know, the racial justice arena, you know, my day job is based in Boston. And so I'm in that arena professionally. I actually have little interest in dating anybody who is putting up that stuff. One, I need to have that separation. Again, it's that private side. I don't want to talk about my work all the time. It's something that I really didn't realize till the past year and a half. Person prior that I had dated would always want to talk to me about work. Guess what? I don't want to talk about work. There, I can jump on the internet at any point and talk about my work. I get paid to talk about my work. I don't want to talk about it. Like, I want to know that obviously you're not like, you're not a bigot, clearly. I want to know that you have some level of analysis, whether you would name it as that or not, but I don't need to see that. And when I see that, it just feels cringy. It's just like, you know, people who put a sign in their yard, but you know, I live on this island. It's like, there are people who put signs in their yards like, oh, Black Lives Matter, but you never speak to me and I'm black. And there are only like 5 black people who live on this island. So I'm sorry. Like, why do you even have that sign there? Yeah. I definitely, you know, I can't say that I ended up dating someone for a number of months. And it was really a complex, messy situation. He's indigenous from one of the tribes here in Maine, but had been career military man, like retired from the military. And it's like one of those situations where I thought, okay, he's indigenous. That's going to outweigh the career in the military. But, you know, you spend 20 something years in the military, we're just not going to see eye to eye. You know, it's like that person was also kind of a low key back the blue person. Yeah. who sometimes like struggled with my work. So it's like, nope, I know enough now. You mentioned military, you mentioned law enforcement. My dad was a cop. We have cops in my family. I love them because they're my family members, but I'm not trying to engage with anybody who's not related to me at that level. I think for me, you know, definitely I think as a, you know, for, on my side, dating the heterosexual people, first off, can we just acknowledge that we're in Maine? So there aren't a lot of people of color to date.
Oh, yes.
And then I don't know how it is for you, but I feel like the pool is even smaller because so many of the men of color who are here are also public figures. So like, you know, each other, because it's like, again, half degree of separation. So you're just not going to date these people, even if they're single, because like, again, you can hear from, you know, a mutual friend, all of their stuff. So my dating pool is essentially white men, which there's a certain irony that I'm like, I really would love to not date another white person or be married to another white person. Not because I have any reverse racism issues, but because I'm getting older and I would actually just like to be able to talk to someone without always having to make sure do I have to explain that to you? And so I get the white men who are kind of like, they see you as a fetish.
Yeah.
It's very much, you know, on dating apps, immediately, like I would say 80% of the men are immediately within a couple of messages mentioning sexual things. It becomes really clear what they're looking for. And, you know, sometimes as adults, we might be into that, but like you're looking for a relationship, that's not exactly what you want. I recently just had this revelation with somebody that I had been involved with before the pandemic and realizing, I think a lot of our connection was about this person sort of like, oh, you're this like magical black woman. You know, and I'm at a point in life where it's like, buddy, that's not a sexy conversation to have with me. You know, where it's like you reduce me down to a body part instead of seeing the totality of me because you've never bothered to actually get to know me. And so I deal, you know, I've dealt with that a lot on the apps. Enough that I'm like, I don't think I just can't see myself trying them out again in earnest because it's just tiring to weed through. I'll never forget, like, right before I met my on again, off again, complicated real life version person, there was an attorney, a fairly, you know, prominent attorney who matched with me on an app. And like within two conversations, the dude's like, you know, you want to come to my house? No. So I don't know how it is for you, but like that's what I get. It's a lot of like weeding through. And I mean, I've had some like first dates that are just been like, I have friends who are like, you could turn these first date stories into a book.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving me an idea for another book. I could probably write a whole book on dating as a Gaysian, you know. But I think, you know, to your comments on and your thoughts on dating and the intersection of dating as people of color, it's definitely a struggle in a state like Maine, where there aren't a lot of people of color to date, and those who are tend to be in the same line of work that we're doing, and so that kind of complicates things where, you know, we have to work together, et cetera, et cetera. But I think definitely people in dating, on dating apps and in real life, we expose ourselves as people of color to even more microaggressions and exoticism and what have you. Like, I've walked into the bar, gay bar, I've been on the apps, Grindr, Tinder, Hinge, and there have been people who just straight up say, oh, I love Asians, or Asians are such good bottoms, or Asians are so submissive, or something as simple as Asian guys are so pretty, like the feminization of Asian men. And that definitely has had an effect on me living and dating here in Maine compared to other, you know, DC, where I lived for a year. And I don't think people realize how hard that is to deal with. And if they're white, you know, they're not going to fix it. I want to say that right off the bat. If you feel bad for us, you're not going to fix it. Like, there's just so many things that you all have to deal with. And there's just, it's so, save your white saviorism for another thing. But anyway, yeah, so dating, as people of color, dating as a gay Asian man, it's just been quite the experience. And so to shift gears a little bit, you know, I kind of want to talk about more about dating apps. You know, what's been your best experience on a dating app, and what's been your worst experience on a dating app?
So I can definitely say that my best experience is with the person that I've been involved with, you know, that I met last year, last February. And I think a lot of it is that while he was born and raised in Maine, he got out of Maine as soon as humanly possible and moved to the South. So he spent, like, you know, pretty much almost all of his 20s and a good chunk of his 30s in Florida in the surrounding areas. And so it gave him, like, a world, like, view that's very different than a white guy born and raised in Maine who, like, had never left. I mean, he's lived in, like, you know, predominantly, he's actually been the guy, the white guy living in the communities of color, particularly around Haitians and folks. So, like, his perspective is just really different. And I think, you know, how we ended up matching, and I don't mind, you know, we talk about, I think on the straight side, there's still sort of a stigma, especially for women, about talking about wanting to get your physical needs met. And so with the time that I was on the app at that point, I had a friend who was my age who said, maybe you should go a little younger. You're not looking for a relationship right now. You're looking to have some fun. Go find yourself a younger man. You're a pretty good looking woman. You don't look like your age. Go find a younger man. And so I was like, yes, let's do that. So I had changed my age settings. I think I took it down to like 36. And I was like, pretty clear, like, I'm not really looking for a relationship. I'm just looking for a friend, potentially, you know, a friend with benefits. And he had almost the same identical profile. Recently relocated my life. I'm rebuilding, you know, looking to meet a woman I could be friends with, looking for an FWB situation. So it turned out like we were both looking for the same thing. Neither one of us was actually looking for a relationship. Which is sort of interesting because that is now the genesis of sort of where, like, how we are where we are now is partly because we jumped into a relationship even though we weren't looking for a relationship. And, like, he knew he had some stuff he had to deal with. And, like, now he still has to deal with that stuff. But it was such a great experience for me to meet somebody that we could just be that upfront about. And not to be all, like, in the details, but I'll never forget, I'm a grown-up, so I was like, third date, no, you come to my house because I'm thinking we're going to, you know. And it turned out, like, yeah, he stayed overnight and eventually the grown-up things happened. But we stayed up till 2 a.m. just talking and listening to music. And I never had really had that experience meeting someone on an app. We both have similar tastes. Our tastes are like old school, like we both love rap, hip hop. We both are into like sort of the African sort of like WizKid kind of stuff and jazz. So that's the other thing that was exciting. It was like, it is so rare for me to meet someone whose musical taste mimic mine and are so eclectic where it's like, oh, you could roll with me on anything. I think the only things he doesn't like is when I play country music. He's like, yeah, I'm not here for
you. You like country music?
I do.
What kind of country?
I'm old school, like Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash, Willie Nelson, the Outlaws, that arena of country, like old country music, not modern country music. So I would say that was like my best experience. He was exactly who he said he was, which is so rare. I mean, I remember when we met, the only thing that was different was he had lost some weight. So it was like, you look exactly like the picture and you were really the person I was messaging. That happens so rarely. My worst experience, the worst experience I had was the summer before the pandemic. I can't remember. I might've met this guy on OkCupid. I think he was also an engineer. I have a thing clearly for the engineer types. He lived out near Sebago Lake and we were having a conversation for a good week and a half. We had some similar social justice, like, you know, interests, seemed really great. Now, admittedly, I'd looked at the photos and I thought he might be kind of short because I know how to angle a camera. You know, we you know, our work, we know how to take a picture. Marfine, We agreed to meet at Riraz because I like to meet close to the boat someplace, you know, because I live on an island. The man shows up. He looks like an angry troll doll in real life. It's like July. The man is wearing hiking boots and carrying a backpack. So we go into Riraz. They seat us and he's making this big show. You can get whatever you want on the menu. He says this as if we are at some top-notch place. It's Riraz. Really? I mean, it's a mediocre place, buddy. It's like Chili's. It's Chili's with an Irish theme. The conversation was so bad, Marfine, that, you know, because you live on an island, you're always cognizant of what boat you're taking home. So I think I'd met him. I ticked the 5 o'clock boat over. This date was so awful that I picked up my phone and I texted the water taxi company because I have an account with them and said, I didn't even want to wait. I was like, hi, this is Shay. Can you get a boat to the Portland dock in the next 20 minutes? As I'm texting him, I'm like, oh my God, my daughter has an emergency. I have to go. And I couldn't even, he's like, oh no, 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 you have to go? And I'm like, I'll pay half. He's like, no, no, no. You ever have a date so bad that you tell the person straight up to their face, yeah, I don't think we should ever talk again. That's how bad it was. And I thought that would never happen because I'd had a date a few years earlier with a guy who showed up in a box, in a panel truck van that had murals painted on it. And on the first date, he's telling me all about his recovery journey in that way that you're like, that's too much information on a first date. Yeah. So yes, to this day, it's funny, my guy has been like, whatever was in the backpack. I'm like, I don't know, but it was weird. He didn't look anything like his photos. He had the personality of an angry troll. And you could tell he thought he was doing this big deal by offering to take me to Rira. No. Awful. Oh, I also learned something from that date. Don't ever make your first date a meal. Even if your conversation is flowing well, don't ever make your first date a meal. You want to go someplace. After that, I had this policy. You just meet them for coffee, ideally. Just meet them for coffee in the morning. Or if you're feeling a little bit better, you meet them for a drink in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. You can always decide it's really good. We could go get something to eat or do a thing. But don't ever lock yourself into like a meal. Otherwise, and they turn into an angry troll doll.
So like I said, that conversation was so fun and we had so much to talk about on dating apps and dating as people of color in Maine that I had to split the episode in two. So this is only part one. So you're going to have to tune in a few weeks for part two. And if you're so inclined, go ahead and subscribe to Shay Stewart Belay's Patreon link there in my episode description. I'm a subscriber. I get a lot out of it. I get to see her writings and her thoughts and get to support her at the same time. So make sure you subscribe to her Patreon and support her. And of course, like, subscribe, follow, whatever you want to do on the social media platforms, your favorite podcasting platforms. See you later.